Friday morning with JR, Simmer, and Hammer. Pierre Maguire standing by. And that was Connor Brown, of course, who yesterday signed a new 3-year contract with the Ottawa Senators and guested with Ian Mendez and Lee Versage on the drive yesterday. If you missed it, you can find it on our website at tsn1200.ca. Love players who say, listen, if you put me with the top players, I really feel good about that.
Yeah. Well, at least you got your payday as well, so you're not counting on it. But the thing, I'll look at him, JR, and it's not always with junior numbers, which were huge in Erie. This guy in the American League put up real good numbers a couple of years, and I always said that trend with guys like Pageau as well. Hey, he had the 20-goal year as a rookie, a couple of down years, and last year, a lot more things point to him being a good offensive player than just getting lucky last year.
As it sits right now, all right, and we went through kind of the right-wing depth chart, and they've signed Dadonoff, and I think to start the year, if we had to slot them 1 through 4,
yeah,
he'd be 1. We'll say Austin Watson is 4.
Yeah.
Then you got Drake Batherson right now and Connor Brown. Would you say right now, if we drop the puck tonight, that Connor Brown would be the quote-unquote second-line right wing, or would Drake Batherson get the chance?
Oh, no, it's Brown all day long. I mean, I like Batherson, but has accomplished nothing in the National Hockey League. He's going into a third-year pro. You have a guy that's not that old, so no, I think it would be old Daddy. Brown, Batherson, and Mr. Watson.
All right, we had a couple of signings around the league yesterday, and it looks like Rick Bonus is going to get his extension with the Dallas Stars. So many things to talk about with Pierre Maguire, who joins us this Friday morning. As always, a presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. How are you doing this morning, Pierre?
Really well, JR. Good morning. Hello, Sean.
Good morning, Pierre.
By the way, Pierre, not to go off topic, and I don't know if you...
Don't talk about it.
Okay. All right.
Is that what you were going to talk about?
About what?
I don't know. I was venturing into something I hadn't even brought up, and I just as I...
Go for it. I thought you were going to talk about the New York Giants.
No. Oh, yes. Well, yes. Pierre, could we talk about the New York football Giants losing to my Philadelphia Eagles? No, we don't want to do that.
JR, That's your team. That was painful.
Did you stay up and watch the end of it, Pierre?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay.
Evan Engram, please catch the ball.
Yeah, no kidding. That would have finished the game. I did want to bring up something because I know you live in Connecticut, but you venture down into the Boston area often.
Yes.
That the state of Massachusetts has shut down all hockey for the next 2 weeks. Yeah, I just read that last night.
Yeah, the rink that I used to train a lot of young players kind of gave me a heads up last Friday that this was trending that way because the state of New Hampshire the week before had decided to do the very same thing, I think until November the 7th. So it looks like they're doing the same thing in Massachusetts, which is really unfortunate. It speaks to what we've been worried about as a group, you know, you and I and Sean in particular, about, you know, the unfortunate part of COVID and you know, taking away venues where kids can and people can go and just let a little steam out in terms of training or trying to get better or skating or working out or whatever. And so, yeah, no, it's an issue. There's no question. I got a text late last night watching that football game from a friend of mine who played hockey at Harvard, and you know, he was basically talking about how unfortunate it is. He lives in that area. It's really, really too bad.
Yep. Well, we're not quite at that stage yet here in Ottawa and Eastern Ontario, although they have drastically cut back the number of kids on the ice, but not to the extent where they've shut everything down. But the numbers here are trending in the wrong direction as well. So that's again, as you just mentioned quite well, it's very unfortunate because kids need to get outside, get exercise, and that's just another avenue that's been closed for them.
100%. And, you know, the other thing, I don't know how much people are paying attention, but officially now the NHL's, you know, canceled the All-Star game and they've canceled the Winter Classic. I think that I was aware of that going back to the time at the bubble in Edmonton. But again, now we're starting to see hard dates that, you know, one was the 1st of January, one was the last weekend of January. Both of those hard dates now in the month of January have been scrubbed from the NHL schedule.
Pierre, would it have made any sense just from a television perspective? Because I know the stadium being full is a big thing, but I mentioned when Ottawa wanted to have their outdoor game here, they actually talked about Parliament Hill, and we had some fun with a pop-up stadium. Would there be any thought without the fans to have a backdrop like that, or at this time, you know what, there's just too much work and too much uncertainty?
I think too much work and too much uncertainty. I know that there's an appetite to try to put it in a farmer's field, build it and they will come. I know that's been talked about. I know there's been discussion about putting it up in the Rockies. You know, I know to say that there's no possibility for that ever, I think would be misleading. I do think there's an attitude to have that.
Yeah, now that you said that, there was a report last week that the NHL talked about Lake Louise as well, right?
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. So I know that there's an appetite to do things like that. But I say that in this year of COVID, it would be very, very difficult without fans. And that's one of the things that I think the league, I know people are going to find this to be, you know, maybe self-serving for the NHL because I'm biased towards them a little bit, that just because I make my living in the league. But I would tell you this, is that the league really cares about the well-being of the fans. They truly, really do. And I heard it so much in Edmonton about we just can't let fans in and then all of a sudden have a huge outbreak of infection. We don't want that for our fans. We care about our fans, which is 100% true. I never heard anybody say, oh, don't worry, they're just fans. They've never once said that. And so I do think there's this very sensitive side to we have to make sure that not only are our players and our trainers and our coaches safe, we need to make sure that our fans are safe. And I know the league really cares about that.
Well, it makes sense given the late start and the compressed schedule, however long it is, that there wouldn't be a break for an All-Star game. They did go to great pains yesterday, Pierre, in their announcing when they announced the cancellation of those two things to say that doesn't mean that a January 1st start date or thereabouts is out the window. It just means we aren't going to do an outdoor game. But as we sit here right now, do you know, is there a specific amount of time that the league has to let its teams know when a season could start? Like, is it 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks? I'm presuming there is a set amount of time in which the teams would be given a heads up as to, hey, we're going to start the season on this date.
I have not heard that. I think you're right, though. I think you're right to say that, but I have not heard that from anybody. So I can't put the league moniker or stamp on it and say, oh, yeah, for sure, that's exactly what the league is saying.
Okay, I just know in the NBA, because I just read a story, because they've talked about going back on Martin Luther King Day, which is January 18th. Right. They have an agreement with the NBA PA of a two-month warning. So, in other words, they have to let them know by November 18th in that circumstance that the season is going to begin on January 18th. So I just wondered if the same thing happened in hockey.
Well, I think the one thing, and you brought it up correctly the other day, and I thought that was big news, even though it didn't sound like much, was that, you know, the NHLPA and the NHL said, okay, the seven teams that didn't play this postseason in the, you know, recreated playoff style that the league implemented, those seven teams would actually be able to start training camp early. But we haven't seen a date on that, have we? So I think that that's something that we need to pay attention to. They would probably get a two-week head start, I would imagine, over the other teams, just so they could kind of get their feet underneath them. So that's something to pay attention to. But I thought when you raised that the other day was a really big point that wasn't getting enough attention around the league.
It would also be another big difference between the NBA and the NHL is that the NBA players get paid year-round and NHL players do not get paid during training camp.
So we've talked about that a lot, Sean. Before you joined JR and I, since you joined JR and I, and the one thing is that's what, again, it's not the fans' job to know this. It doesn't matter for them, but you need to know now. Players don't get paid in training camp, and players don't get paid in the playoffs. That's just the reality of the business. That's how it works. So it's a different kind of an equation compared to what the NBA goes through. So Sean's spot on.
All right, we had a couple of signings around the league yesterday, Pierre. Let's start with a guy you would have seen a lot out in, well, you saw both of them actually in the bubble, but Denis Gurianov was a former first-round pick of Dallas who had a rather uneven start to his career, but kind of a breakthrough this year. And then in the playoffs, he really kind of caught fire. He signed a two-year deal with the Stars yesterday. What's the ceiling for that player, do you think, as we get further down the road in his career?
I think a 25 to 35 goal scorer. I think a power play guy that really makes a difference. A left-hand shot on the right-hand side of the ice with the really lethal one-timer. A player that can dictate the terms through the neutral zone with his speed. He's not really afraid. In fact, he's very, very engaged. So I saw that improve, actually, as we went along in the bubble. His compete factor when it came to one-on-one physical play really enhanced. So I think a really high ceiling, and I could see him in that situation, whether he plays as a first-line winger or a second-line winger, he's going to be a very important player for them.
In a full season, if you're a Dallas Stars fan, Pierre, are you a little bit nervous about some of that older forward group, and the combination of Hudobin and Bishop?
Well, I think that's something that Jim Nill's trying to address. I think it's a very fair point that you're raising. But, you know, again, they're not getting any younger. But, you know, you can look at some of the younger players there. Now, one of the things that happened that I think hasn't been given enough credit anyways is Matthias Janmark leaving. Matthias Janmark was a very good player for them and somebody that they counted on a lot. Do I think the long term they're going to have a problem? I don't know, but I do see some development. Ty DeLandry is a player that I think will develop. Jason Dickinson really had a good playoff. He's going to need to score more. Gerionov being signed. Roope Hintz going to have to be a little bit tougher in every situation. Joel Kiviranta is a really good player, even though he's young. So I do see some younger guys that can compete, but you're right. They're going to have to transition their roster a little bit.
The word is that the Stars and Rick Bowness are edging closer to a contract, which would remove the interim status. Yeah. Why isn't that done already?
Oh, I think it is. I just think that they took their time. Rick wasn't in a rush. Jim wasn't in a rush. Their relationship is rock solid. I just think they were prioritizing getting players done, and I think that deal's getting. I think that deal was done a while ago. I just think there was a handshake, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. We're getting your deal done. Here's what it is. Is that okay with you? And he's like, yeah, sure, no problem. I'm making it simplistic, but I think that was never in jeopardy.
I don't know if we ever discussed it, Pierre, but we had Jimmy Montgomery on just before he was announced as a coach in St. Louis. I have to think behind the scenes that Jimmy Neal must have helped him a lot, because to recover from whatever the hell it was that basically voided two plus years of his contract, for him to get back into the National Hockey League that quick is a great sign for Monty.
Oh, for sure, 100%. I can tell. Listen, you know, once somebody has something negative to say about you at the management level in the league, it's hard to overcome it, even if it's not true. And believe me, there's a lot of character assassination that goes on around the league behind closed doors by guys that smile right at your face, say, "Oh, I think you're great," and then the door closes and they slam you and crush you, and really affect your ability to get jobs, especially high-profile jobs. So that happens a lot, as you know, Sean. But Jim Neal is one of the great gentlemen and great people in the game, I'm telling you. He is a phenomenal human being. He's fought cancer. His wife's been fighting cancer for over 20 years. He has his priorities straight. He's an outstanding person in our league. And I'm sure that he helped Jim. I can tell you this, too. I know of one team that really actively wanted to pursue Jim as a coach, and ownership wouldn't let them. So, you know, it shows you what I'm just talking about. So Jim Neal definitely stepped up, I got to think, behind the scenes and did some good stuff for Jimmy Montgomery.
The Vancouver Canucks signed Jake Virtanen to a two-year deal. He had a career-high 18 goals this past year. He gets $2.6 million per year. Talking about guys who kind of had slow starts to their career, do you think the light has gone off? Do you think this year is an aberration? What are your thoughts on Virtanen? You would have seen him a lot during the playoffs.
I was really impressed, and that's one of the things I really enjoyed. I saw Jake Virtanen some nights start on the fourth line and eventually move up to the top line to play with Bo Horvat or Pettersson. And then I saw other nights where he's playing deeper in the lineup with Jay Beagle or Brandon Sutter, and I thought he did fantastic things. So he can play a lot of different roles. But I do think he's a 20-goal scorer. I don't think he's more than that. I think that's about where he's going to come in. His speed is very apparent. His size is apparent. He's game. He's really game in terms of getting engaged. So I think that that's a good signing, and I think Jake wants to prove a lot of people wrong. You know, people slam you a lot when you're a young player and you don't get things done or you don't play the way you can. But here's a kid that grew up in B.C. He's from Langley, B.C. Here's a guy that really cares about being a Canuck. He's a hometown boy, and he wants to prove people wrong. That's a motivated person, and that's somebody that can help your team.
Do you worry a little bit about the hockey sense, Pierre?
I do, but again, the size and the skating can overcome some of that. That's why I think that some nights you see him start on the fourth line, and then all of a sudden they realize we need a little bit of a spark, and he's a guy that can provide a spark. Now, it's not always going to be cute. It's not always going to be fancy. I don't see a lot of power play time for him unless he's jamming the opposition's front of the net, but I do see that size and that skating ability, and that's definitely a factor.
We had Connor Brown on. I don't know if you ended up hearing that little piece we ran just before.
Not talking to Maddie, sorry.
Yeah, no problem. He said, I see myself, when talked about his role with the team going forward, he says, I see myself playing with top guys, and I think the game pretty well. You know, the PK obviously is part of my game. I want to take a step forward offensively. I think I have more to give. Were kind of the was one of the big takeaways from that. I mean, Connor Brown had 16 goals this past year, and they had to play a full season. Might have got close to 20. But the opportunities may not be there as much going forward with kind of more of the young players coming up. So what do you think is his ideal future with the Sens?
I see him between 17 and 24 goals, somewhere in there, and I see him being an unbelievable leader for the team. I see him being a critical component to the team. Players like that matter a lot. I'd use the Blake Coleman, Barkley Goodrow, Yanni Gourde kind of example. Alex Killorn kind of example. Those players matter a lot, and they're important players. And Killorn has proven over time, when he came out of Harvard, a lot of people thought one-dimensional checker, penalty killer. Now all of a sudden gets power play time, plays as a second-line player, does some fantastic things in every facet of the game. Killorn's a really important player for Tampa. Connor Brown's got to try to fashion his game after Alex Killorn. And if he can do that, he's a really good player because Killorn's a really, really good player.
Yeah, and never misses a game. Going back to his rookie year, he comes in and scores 20 goals, 36 points. Why the change in ice time and obviously change in production, where after a pretty strong rookie year, Pierre, I know they're pretty deep up front, but philosophically sliding him down lower in the lineup?
No idea. I couldn't even begin to tell you. You know, I remember, I just remember Mike Babcock really liking Connor at the beginning. And I don't know what happened there. I really couldn't even begin to tell you what happened. But I would tell you this. You know, Zach Hyman's a guy that's really important. Connor Brown, Nazem Kadri, those guys, they're hard to find, those guys. And, Zach Hyman's done some really good things in Toronto. I thought Connor was on the way to doing a lot of those same very good things. I thought Kadri, I know people were pointing at the penalties in the playoffs, but you look at his playoff with Colorado this year, and you're like, whoa, that guy's good. So, you know, maybe they just wanted to transition their roster and become a little bit more slick. But I said this to Mitch Melnyk, the great Mitch Melnyk on Montreal Radio yesterday. You don't win championships with toe draggers and slicksters. You don't. And I think Toronto figured that out this offseason. They might have made some mistakes earlier. And Connor might have been one of those mistakes. We'll see long term.
What about silly siders? You like that silly side? Can you win with a silly? Grant Fuhr was a silly sider.
You can win with silly siders. I was just going to say, Grant won.
Yeah, that's a right catching goalie for those who don't. That's Pierre's term.
That's a scouting terminology.
Yes.
And I won't even begin to lie to you.
Yeah.
I learned that many, many moons ago on the Coquihalla Pass riding with the late Charlie Hodge, who was the backup to Jacques Plante. He used to say to me all the time, you got to get that silly sider. You got to get a report on that silly sider. And so finally, I just said, Charlie, what the heck are you talking about? He goes, a guy that catches with his right hand. Haven't you heard that before? I'm like, no. He goes, Toe Blake used to tell me that. I'm like, okay.
Pierre, to finish, Fred Shiro was born on this day in 1925. Of course, passed away in 1990. Coached a Hockey Hall of Famer, coached the Flyers to two Stanley Cups in the mid-1970s. Mm-hmm. I know you were just kind of getting into hockey kind of around that time when he passed away. But what are your memories of Fred Shiro in his time?
Well, I'm very, very good friends with his son. I got to know Coach Shiro really well when I was a college coach. And, he was always amazingly fair to me. He's super intelligent. You could sit down anywhere with him. It could be in a ballroom or it could be in a bar or it could be in a rink. And he would speak to you in this unbelievably erudite and intelligent way about hockey or about politics or about anything. He's super smart. What I found the most interesting was near the end of his career, he was a radio analyst for the New Jersey Devils, and he was actually really good at it, even though he's a very quiet person. He was very good at it. And near the end of his career as well, he went and coached in the Dutch Elite League and for Tilburg, I think it was.
Yeah, that's
Tilburg
where the real coaches are made, in the Dutch Elite League, the
DEL.
Well,
let me tell you something. Tilburg was a very good program at the time. I had played against them probably 4 or 5 years before that, and very, very good program. And Freddie went and coached over there. He and his wife Mariette went over and lived there and coached there, and he had a great time. He loved it. He said, this league's way undervalued. I remember him telling me that in terms of the players that were coming out of that league at the time. So there were a lot of Dutch Canadians, JR, playing over there at the time. Some pretty darn good players.
Absolutely. And when they weren't doing that, they were speed skating on the frozen canals.
Oh, that's only up north. There's that frozen canal stuff is overblown.
Well, that's not
they,
even...
they were up in Groningen and they were up in Heerenveen.
Nice.
There
yeah.
you go. A little Dutch for you today, JR.
Nice. I love that, Pierre. Yeah, they don't even do it anymore, by the way. They've moved it into other countries, believe it or not, the speed skating in the outdoors. But that's a story for another day. We're going to put that on pause and wish you a good weekend, whatever you are up to, and we'll look forward to chatting. We'll see if a few more of these free agents have been sitting out for 3 weeks.
Where's Hoffman? Where's Vodman? Those are my two guys. I can't believe neither one of those guys.
Maybe it'll happen this weekend. We'll chat about it with you on Monday. Thanks for the time. Enjoy your weekend.
You guys have been great all week. Sean, thanks a lot. Jared, thanks a lot. Matt Hamer, thank you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Stay safe. Enjoy your family and friends. Take care.
NBC's Pierre Maguire on TSN 1200 is a presentation of Myers Automotive Group.
All right, welcome back. 8:40 here on this Friday morning. JR, Zimmer, and Hammer. Dave Naylor is going to join us from TSN.ca a little later on after 9 o'clock. We're going to talk about the influx of great Canadian receivers into U.S. college football. We've got at least three of them, and of course, all following in the footsteps of Chase Claypool, who's had an unbelievable start to his NFL career with the Pittsburgh Steelers, came out of Notre Dame University, and of course, originally from BC. So some good Canadian content. So we'll talk about what you can watch for on the U.S. college football field this weekend with Dave.
Yeah, it has not made an impact, and maybe might be a bust, but N'Keal Harry, also from Toronto, went to U.S. college and a first-round pick. So
he only lived for a year in Toronto, though, wasn't he?
I thought he lived up until high school, and then he had to go down south to end up playing. No?
Okay. You know what? I could be maybe I'm confusing him. So I thought I heard the story on him was that he was just born in Toronto and moved when he was a year old.
Could be.
That's your team. You should have this. Yeah, you should know this guy.
I know. And that's where I thought. I thought he actually moved down to live with his grandmother in Arizona to go to high school for football.
Yeah, you may be right.
With Claypool, did he go to high school in BC or did he go right to...
Okay. Yes. Yes. I don't know if he ended up going to one prep for a prep school for a final. Yeah. He could have. I don't know. I don't know the story of that. But I know because I watched one of the Steeler games, his breakout game against the Eagles when he scored four touchdowns. And they're talking about... the fact that he had played some U.S. or some high school football in back in B.C.
Yeah.
So I got a tweet here from VDH who writes, I never knew about Fred Shiro coaching in the Netherlands. After Maguire's lesson, I was curious to see if the Tilburg team and league still existed. Check out this dude from last season's roster. Must have been their power play quarterback with a big shot. And VDH sent us a screen grab of player Brent Vandenboom.
Yeah.
What an unbelievable great hockey name that would be for your power play. That's unbelievable. Brent Vandenboom your defenseman.
You got to have Danny Gallivan doing that one.
For the Tilburg Trappers.
And you go back 80s, I think there were still quite a few guys from junior hockey and from Canada going over there. And I guess this would have all been, post-World War II, where they started playing a little ice hockey?
Sure.
Had some of the Canadians going, but boy, that's pretty much dried up and not much sign of hockey. I mean, when you realistically go through Europe now, sadly, outside of Switzerland, Czech Republic, Finland, Sweden, and Russia. Nah, not a whole lot of ice hockey going on.
Some wrenches on this Wrench Throwing Friday. Keep those coming. Text us at 12-1200. Tweet at us at TSN 1200. Again, Wrench Throwing Friday. If you're new to the show, unfamiliar with it, your acronym is WTF, Wrench Throwing Friday, which you might normally go, what the? So, and we won't fill in the blank. So it's something that's bothered you. If you text us what that is, then we toss a wrench at it so you feel better going into the weekend. Wrench to JR for leaving out all the beers he's been taking down while trying to wash down the last couple of nights' dinners in his cleansing story. I picture Stone Cold Steve Austin at the dinner table. That's from Unsigned. We're back to talk some Seahawk win after Green Bay last night on TSN 1200.
That's the cleanse.
That's when my brain is broken through lack of food and this cleansing there.
This whole cleansing thing, I don't even know why it would be a bad thing just on a night, take a shot of vodka. You know, just a little something to soothe you down, send you
little
into
nip.
It. And also, I'm not going to throw a wrench at Pierre, but I hope when we're this afternoon he's on with the great Mitch Melnick that he mentioned he's on with the great JR every morning. Right?
And like, the great Sean Simpson,
No. The great JR. I don't understand where he slid in that great Mitch Melnick. Melnick. Like, come on, man.
Well, hey? Pierre's Montreal guy. He's got a soft spot for those guys. Okay, I understand that. Let's see here. Brett Hull, Gloria Wrench to myself for having my radio on delay and thinking I was the right caller this morning for the Gabriel Pizza Contest. That's from Jamie at Publissimo.
Gloria, I think I got your number.
Well, by the way, was it Ryan? Yeah, surprise, surprise. It was Ryan that qualified this morning just before 8 o'clock. I did not congratulate Ryan, so well done. We'll have another qualifier in our Pizza for Year contest with Gabriel Pizza coming up before 10. A stuffed hockey bag full of wrenches to the whole Leafs organization just because I feel like it. That's from Jib's dad.
Cheese curds for poutine.
Wrench to everybody still talking about the Sens signing Connor Brown. That's from Scott.
Mark Borowski.
Turk writes, big wrench to my coworker Tom for not listening to TSN 1200 any longer because he's riding in with a woman to work now who doesn't like to listen. That's from Turk.
J'aimerais remercier Félicité.
You're going to be missing this gold, man.
Why is that just appearing for the first time right now? That is my absolute favorite current wrench that we have. Well, no, the latest one on Simmer is my new favorite, but that's my pending favorite.
Yeah, that was a solid one. Dave Branch in handing out the Memorial Cup and somehow pretending that to be French. But as I said, reminds me of when you get on the plane and the flight attendant, you know, has no French skills whatsoever and is reading off of a piece of paper. And other than having to do that, nobody in French or English has any idea what they're saying.
Reverse A, Felicite. Noah is a huge Hawks fan, the bus driver. Morning, gentlemen. Can I please get a Tane and Caves wrench thrown at Stan Bowman and my Blackhawks for announcing a rebuild 3 to 4 years too late? That's from Noah. I'm going to look at Caves and Tane in particular.
And we're reversed. It's Caves and then Tane. It's Tango and Cash, Caves and Tane.
You know which one you're going to be playing next. Can you throw a wrench at Simmer for making me spit out my coffee this morning laughing?
I just want to shout out some Blue Jays names. Alexander Doyle. No, what was his name again?
Doyle Alexander.
And there are times where I play along a little bit. I was totally convinced myself that I had that one right, because Hammer had just thrown out a real strong Candy Maldonado, and I needed to find somebody fairly obscure.
You got your backup on that one.
Cam writes, a Friday wrench to the 20-yard line that Daniel Jones tripped over last night. It's the best defense the Eagles had last night. That's from Cam.
Oh, come on, guys. You can do better than that. Let's go. All right, keep it coming.
Does he get the opportunity, guys, now to go into, because it was the 10th anniversary of the butt fumble? Like, are we...
Oh, the New York Sports Blooper Hall of Fame?
Yeah, are we going into that kind of territory?
You know,
it was hyped up last night, JR. It was trending everywhere.
Right? Oh, absolutely. And it should. That will be... TSN does their Blooper of the Year show every year at the end of the year. It will be top five. Will it be the top one? It's going to be in the running. It has to be in the running of Daniel Jones last night. For those that missed it, let's replay what we did. And we'll do the radio version because it's a little more descriptive of how all this went down. So, again, third quarter, Daniel Jones is the Giants quarterback. They got the ball on their own 12-yard line, and this is looking like an historic run when this happens.
Shotgun formation. Jones fakes it. Now he runs. He's got a huge hole, 25-30, and there he goes. Daniel Jones stumbles down at the 15. He could not get there, running out of gas. Jones had nothing but green grass in front of him.
Like, literally, the seas parted. Is like he was like Moses running down the field. He is 10 yards behind anybody running for an 88-yard touchdown when he trips over the 15-yard line. Here's his explanation after.
I don't know. I just tried to run faster than I was running and got caught up. So we finished the drive, scored a touchdown. So that was a relief.
All right. That is and that
too, quote right there. That was my favorite.
I tried
part of the
to run faster than I was running is the great just the great exclamation point on an unbelievable blooper play.
Yeah, no, it is. And I'm sure New York paper is having a whole lot of fun. And when you are a laughing stock, that's where the Giants are at right now. No, that just ends up adding to it.
We got to go to the New York Post. Hammer, you got to go to New York Post Sports on Twitter and find out what their back page headline
they've gotta
is.
Have something,
oh,
right?
My goodness. Yeah. They would have been had a field day
Who was the fella this year? It is this year in the NFL that was running in the touchdown and didn't make it, that got the ball swatted out? Am I dreaming of something? Thought there was something similar to, we kind of joked about Leon Lett. Was there not a similar blooper so far this year, guys?
Oh, yes. That was DK Metcalf who was running in.
He was styling.
Styling. So those are the 1-2 combo so far this season.
Yeah. The New York Post has not gone with Daniel Jones.
What?
They've gone with Evan and Hell. They've gone with the drop.
Oh, okay.
And what cost the Giants the victory?
Well, that's what Pierre mentioned. Yeah, for those that weren't up late enough to watch that not very entertaining football game between two bad football teams last night. Yeah, the Giants had a chance to close it out, and Evan Engram had a pass laid right in his hands that would have essentially sealed the game, and just dropped it. Giants were forced to punt, and from there the Eagles drove down the field and scored the game-winning touchdown with 18 seconds to go. Carson Wentz to Boston Scott. So a guy named Boston wins a game between New York and Philly. How fitting is that? But the Eagles win at 22-21, yeah. And they're now into first place ahead of them stinking Cowboys.
Yeah.
Take that. Yeah,
Cowboys?
Yeah! Ian Mendez. Ian, you know what? I'm going to get on the Twitter machine because Ian Mendez tweeted at me last Sunday and said, whose team's looking up at whose right now?
Yeah.
Maybe I should tweet right back.
There should be no trash talk in the NFC East whatsoever.
Even to the Lee Meister. You got to get. And this is also the way it stacks up, guys. It wouldn't, with where the Giants or Redskins at, it wouldn't be any fun. The fact that the Eagles are terrible, but it sets up and they'll play next week against the Cowboys. This is what you want at the end of the day. I mean, you'd love to see them slide by the old Cowboys and then win in the division.
Yes, that would be very fitting. All right, let's take a break. 8:50. We're going to talk more football with Dave Naylor coming up just after 9 o'clock. But when we return, we'll get into, you know, who's, you see the story about Wayne Gretzky selling his house again for the second time? You want to talk about people in Ottawa making a whole bunch of pile of money on selling their house these days because the real estate market is so hot? How about what Wayne Gretzky is doing down in Los Angeles? I tell you what. He should become your new real estate agent based on what he's doing down there.
Did he originally sell it to Dykstra for $17 and buy it back for $8?
That's what I was teasing, so that's why we'll...
No, but you didn't say the price of the house now.
We'll come back.
Please tell me more.
Fill in the details when we return. That's next here on TSN 1200. And speaking of our house... the folks at Hamry Real Estate, if you have your house on the market or you're looking for a house, are certainly the guys to talk to. Good friends of yours. And I never ask you to pick your favorite, right, Zimmer?
Yeah.
The two brothers,
yeah.
Greg and Steve?
Well, no, I grew up with Greg, okay. So it's going to be
all right,
Greg.
Greg's the favorite. Yeah. Steve. Certainly a distant second.
Yeah.
Yeah. In Ottawa, the Hamry's mean real estate, though. Outstanding marketing, maximum exposure, more buyers, better offers for your home. Hamry has been a name of value, commitment, and trust in the real estate community for over 40 years, and they're prepared to meet all the new challenges coming to the world of real estate. Video conferencing and dealing with their clients electronically is nothing new to the Hamry team. They've been able to give you the exceptional service you've been used to even in these uncharted times. So when you're thinking of buying or selling a home in Ottawa, think Greg and Steve Hamry from the Hamry Real Estate Team at REMAX Affiliates Realty, inspiring dreams in real estate since 1980, 40 years ago, at weknowottawa.com.
And one of the cool things about that, JR, like anybody else, say the mother started out Shirley in 1980, now Greg's daughter Chelsea is in, but how many families that Shirley at the time would have sold or helped buy homes for, now you're getting into grandparents and parents and third and fourth generations, and it's all about reputation in Ottawa, and they have an excellent one.
All right, speaking of real estate, I teased this before, and then Zimmer tried to wreck my tease by giving out too much detail.
I built it up even further.
You did. Wayne Gretzky has listed, so they're playing the Zozo tournament this weekend.
Yeah.
At the Sherwood course in Southern California, a course that Tiger Woods has won 5 times on before. They had one. Remember when they used to do the primetime matches, one-on-one? They did one of those at the Sherwood. They got one of those holes, got a rock in the middle of it.
Yeah, but didn't they do the one that was actually under the lights with him and Duval
and
Mickelson? Yeah,
yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, Wayne Gretzky has a home. He built a home on that golf course, as a matter of fact. Sold it a few years ago to Lenny Dykstra for $18.5 million. He bought it back from Lenny Dykstra in 2018, 5 years later, for $13.5 million. In other words, $5 million less than he sold it for. He is now turning around 2 years later and selling it for $23 million. So you know who doesn't need the help of Greg and Steve Hamry at Hamry Real Estate? It's Wayne Gretzky.
Yeah.
By the way, if you're in the market for a home on the Sherwood Golf Course, 6.5 acres, 13,000 square feet, 6 bedrooms, 8 bathrooms, a tennis court, and a pool. And, $23 million is what you can land that bad boy on. I don't know if it comes with a golf course membership.
Yeah, well, you would hope so. I'm not a fan of the house, got to say. I don't like that whole terrace thing or what's going on in the back, but it is a nice shack.
You took a look at it?
Yeah. What was also interesting, Jared, when you go back to that tournament that they played, and I don't know why I didn't think it seemed to fit, and I don't know any of the backstory, but remember Claude Lemieux was one of his neighbors?
Yes.
And that's who was walking around. I just was kind of like, I just don't feel that. First of all, that Claude Lemieux should live there, but he's also hanging out with the G-Man.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Anyway, that's I'll say odd that you would sell a house and then buy it back again, but maybe it was just too good a deal.
To have gone into, with Dykstra's problems, though, I'm guessing it went into foreclosure.
Probably.
Right?
But then to turn around and then sell it again, like, are you doing this totally as a real estate play? Because Wayne Gretzky, he and Janet built this house.
Oh, okay.
So, and raised their family there. So it's, you know, and anybody who's lived in a home for a long, long time and raised a family. It's got a special place in your heart,
yeah,
right?
Oh, for
so,
sure, yeah.
So to buy it, to build it, sell it, buy it back, and then sell it again purely as a real estate play seems a bit
Probably a good
weird.
Chance of Doris is involved, but we won't speculate on that.
A what?
What? A divorce.
Now you're telling tales out
no,
of school.
No, I know.
Yeah, there
but,
you go.
But you're right. That is to have gone back in that second time. You'd think you'd hold on to that the rest of your life. But I guess if there's that much of an increase, and we see that in any of the real estate shows, some houses aren't for sale. But if somebody's willing to offer you such a ridiculous price, you sell it anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, 9 o'clock. Let's take a break. We'll get you the latest news from 580 CFRA and run down the busy scoreboard for you, or relatively busy, including the Eagles win over the Giants. We'll set you up for what we have planned for you on Sunday, NFL Sunday. And, of course, it's the World Series Game 3 tonight between the Dodgers and the Rays. And then when we come back, it's U.S. College Football Saturday. The Big Ten kicks off this weekend. And we've got at least three high-profile players in U.S. college football who are Canadian. Dave Naylor talked to them this week, so we're going to talk to him about what you can watch for tomorrow, and, of course, about Chase Claypool's great start to his NFL career. And you know what else we got to talk about, Hammer, with you? Huh? The big MMA match this weekend. Khabib and Justin Gaethje.
Yes, sir.
Okay, this is the best card since in terms of headline.
Of headlining. Man. Well, you know, I think they had a headliner just a little while ago. I'll give it some thought, but yeah. It's always when Khabib's in the main event, it's always a must-see.
Well, when's the last time he fought?
Oh, it's been close to a year.
Yeah. So a lot of people looking forward to that tomorrow night. All right, so we'll talk about that in the next hour as well. Look at this day in sports history and celebrate some sports birthdays as we roll on here for a Friday morning, getting set for the weekend on Sports Radio TSN 1200.